are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here with you on this Tuesday episode of the show. And free agency period started with a flurry on Monday. So much stuff going down around the league. Guys getting paid left and right. Lots of dollars being thrown around by NFL franchises. The 49ers got in early and they got a linebacker. Something that I talked about yesterday on the show being something I thought maybe was a little bit unlikely and would at least be behind a few other positions in the pecking order of needs. But the 49ers went hard after linebacker from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Quan Alexander, who is a super athletic, a weak side linebacker, very nice fit for the 49ers scheme. The big caveat here is, well, first of all, money is quite large for Quan Alexander to buy him away from Tampa. But the other thing is he's coming off an ACL. He tore his ACL in late October. Prognosis still looks good for him to be ready for training camp. So hopefully for the 49ers, he's right on that pace and he's just behind Jimmy Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon as far as ACL recoveries go, and maybe how good those rehabs were going made them feel a lot better about giving Quan Alexander a four-year contract worth as much as $57 million. $27 million of those dollars guaranteed, and for a short time made him the highest-paid linebacker in the NFL, being surpassed multiple times as we go forward here through free agency for linebackers. We'll be getting into a ton of Quan Alexander stuff. My guests today, James Yarko, host of Locked On Buccaneers, is going to drop some knowledge from a Tampa Bay standpoint on who Quan Alexander is, and film junkie John Chapman joining me on the show in part one of our conversation. We're going to talk free agency, Quan Alexander, and some other options for the 49ers, and then we're going to have part two with John next week, breaking down some NFL draft prospects. And we'll get into more of the signings throughout the league and some wow signings and some different players around the league that might impact the 49ers in one way or another, and definitely get into more of that with Nick on Wednesday's show. But today I want to focus on Quan and leave some time for today's guest. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we are everywhere. You can follow me on Twitter at BDPeacock. Email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. You can find all of the shows and other articles at LockedOn49ers.com. And if you're in your car, just tell your smart device, play podcast, Locked On 49ers. And with that, let's bring on today's first guest. Joining me now is John Chapman. You might have seen his work and some of his film work and some videos and stuff trickle down your Twitter timeline at JL_Chapman, or have listened to his podcast. He is the host of 49ers Rush Podcast. He's also a contributor at Eat Sleep Fantasy Football and 49ers Hub, and he is a film junkie, which is why I wanted to bring John on the show. We're going to talk some free agency stuff today, and then we're going to have a part two of this, and which is really the reason I wanted to have him on, was to talk some film and talk some NFL draft. So that podcast part two will probably drop sometime next week after this free agency frenzy. So John, welcome to the program.
Man, really glad to be here, Brian. Really appreciate it. And what an awesome time of year. You know, you and I were talking right before, you know, we hit record, and this is a fun day. I mean, you've got news popping on all the teams and speculation, and it doesn't matter what any team does, somebody's going to be upset. And just, why'd we pay so much? Why'd we get this guy, not that guy? And man, it's awesome. I love all the hate in the air.
It's, right. It's palpable. It's funny because it's the most awesome reaction you see a ton of it is like, why aren't the 49ers doing anything? Even before the quote-unquote tampering period opens, so many fans were tweeting at me, and you see it on the timeline, and you hear it on talk radio, and people are like, there's no rumors. You know, they didn't trade for Antonio Brown. Do something, do something. And then they do something, and they're like, oh, no, we hate that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And so it's a really awesome dichotomy. And sometimes they're kind of right. Like, it's not a bad thing either. Like, I understand the passion. And sometimes you're not wrong. It's like the 49ers need to do some obvious things. And then when they don't do the obvious thing and they do something that you didn't really see coming, it's like, okay, wait a second. Now I've got to process this.
And that's the thing. Like, what you have to understand with this front office, you know, Parag's amazing, Marant. Mm-hmm. And every time you see a contract under this new front office, everybody's like, oh my gosh, you know, why so much money? But once all the contract details come out, then it's like, oh, wait a second. You know, especially, you know, I put out something earlier today just talking about the differences in 2017 cap hits versus 2018 cap hits. Jimmy G's deal, he's down $17 million from his cap hit a year ago. And so he's getting paid $4 million less than what Nick Foles just signed for. I don't think there's one team in the NFL that would prefer Nick Foles long-term over Jimmy Garoppolo. And so what you got to do is just pump the brakes, see how it all works out. Everything that we sign somebody to is going to be crazy incentives. Playing time percentage is going to be calculated in there. And so especially with somebody with injury history like Kwon Alexander. So just wait. Hold on. It's going to be okay. Did we get better today? I think we did. I really do think we did.
Right. The 49ers for sure got a good player in Kwon Alexander. And you were saying that you did put some of the Kwon film on, and I hadn't really watched him since college. And I know he was sort of that prototype Will linebacker, undersized, very fast. I think he ran 4.55 coming out of college.
LSU.
Yeah, LSU. And he's teammates. And there's he's shouting at his college teammate OBJ on Twitter after he signed, and so more recruiting happening, which we can get into as well. But just as far as Kwon Alexander, I know the initial reports, and that's one of the things that people need to pump the brakes on and just realize that the first number you see, that's the agent's number. That's the number they want out there. Like, the agents are the ones calling Adam Schefter, and they're like, hey dude, 4 years, $57 million, $27 million guaranteed, highest paid linebacker in the NFL. And so after Kwon Alexander becomes highest paid linebacker in the NFL, then four other linebackers pass him up and become highest paid linebacker in the NFL before this process is done. It'll probably be CJ Mosley, who's on the top of that heap within the next 48 hours or so. And so we'll see how that breaks down. Kwon's coming off the ACL, which is a little bit worrisome. And I understand, you know, 49ers fans coming through that Trent Baalke era, like that's a big deal. And I don't think John Lynch really understands how those three letters ACL makes a 49ers fan feel and putting a bunch of money down on a guy. But healthy, perfect fit, love the fit. He's a really good player. Apparently like an awesome locker room guy too, which is really important to this regime. And I love that about him. And so the thing is how is this contract structured? And you mentioned Parague. And so when this contract gets all Parague'd out at the end, I wonder how many incentives are going to be there. And I think the $27 million 4 years guaranteed, I think that number is going to be closer. And I know Jason Fitzgerald of OverTheCap.com was saying, yeah, we'll see if there's like per game incentives here. And so we'll really see what this contract looks like. I don't think it's going to look as huge as that initial 4 years, $57 million. But, you know, we'll see when we get the real numbers.
Right. And the thing is, like, you know, you brought up that he's such a great locker room guy. I've watched two game film just, you know, on NFL Game Pass on him. And you see it on the film. Like, one, he's always around the ball. And two, anytime he makes a play, the players run to him. And so he's never by himself. I know Lynch values leadership and attitude and things like that. Like, he brings energy to the field. And every single play, it doesn't matter, he's going to be around, which is awesome. And he's young. I mean, we're getting he's 24. He's actually younger. I don't want to say his name, but the linebacker we drafted out of Alabama, he's actually younger than him.
There are some similarities there. He's 4 months younger. I'll say the name. He's 4 months younger than Reuben Foster, even though he came out of college a couple years before. And he brings some of the same qualities as far as that range, sideline to sideline and chasing people down. But he brings a little thump, even though he's a little bit of an undersized linebacker, which is something that people might be surprised about. Like, he'll jar the ball loose. He comes correct. And I think that's just part of his mentality, which is why he's a great locker room guy and a leader on the field. He will run through you. He does that thing where he aims like 3 yards beyond where the ball carrier is, even though he doesn't bring a lot of weight. He can bring a little thump, even though he's undersized. And the key here is the coverage stuff. Like, the coverage ability has gone up and down as far as if you're looking at PFF grades and stuff. But he's been a pretty productive guy for 4 years and deserves a nice little contract. The question for me becomes positional value. Like, right now the 49ers are putting a lot of money in running back position and inside linebacker, which is where, for me, like, that's backwards. That's not where you put all of your resources. But as far as the player goes, what did you see from your quick little film run there of some of the Kwon Alexander from his days in the NFL with the Buccaneers?
Yeah, so the pros right off the bat, he is unreal versus the screen game. So if you're going to try to do lateral stuff behind the line of scrimmage, that's kind of when he's at his best. You know, his short shuttle time was a 4.2, which is elite for a slot corner. I mean, the guy can change directions very, very well, but he is shot out of cannon once he diagnoses the play and he's like, all right, this is where the play is. Now, sometimes that diagnosis is a little slow, but once he figures it out, I mean, he shows up on film. Like, he's not one of those guys where you need like a play indicator on his film or like what number is he? You just watch one play and you're like, oh my gosh, it's that guy who's running through everybody in a straight line. Now, the main cons that jumped out, missed tackles for sure. He's one of those guys that plays with his hair on fire and he's going to come in and blow you up. And the initial contact's always great, but you do see a lot of times where if it's a pinball or a bowling ball type running back, well, they'll bounce back a yard and then they'll get extra yards after that because he doesn't wrap up. And another interesting note I found, he had the shortest arm length of any linebacker in the past 10 years that go through the combine. So if you're, you know, Trent Baalke somewhere just pissed off because arm length was kind of his thing. But yeah, short arms, but he the athleticism is there. He plays behind his pads a lot, which you love at the point of contact. He's not a upright guy. And so because of that, he's kind of hard to block. You'll see him just kind of rub through the shoulders of old linemen trying to get to the second level. Like they don't get their hands on him very much. He gives them a very, very small target and very disruptive in the blitzing game. I really hope that this is something that we can bring with our new defense. You know, we brought a couple new defensive coaches in. I'm hoping that we can utilize more five-man blitzes to manufacture some pressure. And this is the perfect guy for it. So really excited about him. I think that we got better today. I really do believe that. And it's just if he can stay healthy and fix those missed tackles, that's going to be the thing.
Yeah, and arm length is a lot of times that correlation with missed tackles, and that's why you want to have a guy with big arms, big hands that can corral players and bring the guy to the ground and finish that off. So hopefully, you know, maybe some technique stuff. You said not wrapping up, and maybe he can clean some of that up. And really the key here is the ACL. If he comes back from the ACL, and so there's going to be a lot of ACL watch going on in training camp with Quan Alexander and Jerick McKinnon and, of course, Jimmy Garoppolo. And maybe those guys can help each other out. And hopefully, I mean, 3 out of 3 is asking a lot. But hope that's what the 49ers are going to need is all three of those guys. Especially, I mean, look, Matt Breida proved he can be a baller. So if there's one of those three that maybe doesn't come through 100%, I think you want Quan Alexander and Jimmy Garoppolo to be the guys that are ready to play. And I think anything that Jerick McKinnon gives you is an added bonus, and he might have to really split time with Breida anyways just to keep both of those two backs healthy.
Right. No, and we've seen Shanahan do that before, you know, whenever he was with Atlanta. So I'm hoping that that's going to be the case. And, you know, there's a lot of talent in that backfield, which is just a blast. It's just how's he going to use it?
Kentavious Street, that's the other ACL guy. I forgot about him, too. So he missed his whole rookie season. He did get back to practice already, so he's way ahead as far as his ACL goes compared to the other three. But there's another ACL guy, which is, man, this is very Trent Baalke-esque. A lot of ACL injuries. It's interesting. So hopefully that doesn't come back to haunt the new regime as it did the old regime. All right, so beyond Quan Alexander, it's been pretty quiet on the 49ers front, which is another reason I think Parag has a big part of this contract. I think they're like, look, parade this big number out on day one of the free agency period, but we all know behind the scenes we wouldn't have done this deal if you weren't willing to have some concessions and you know, do some things with bonuses or per game or just some ways to make this make sense for the 49ers. So I think that's what it's going to look like when we actually see what this contract is. But the 49ers have been quiet otherwise. Do you think, you mentioned at the top of this conversation here about how they front-loaded some other contracts, they have a lot of room to work with. Do you think they're done? Do you think there's another splash or two for the 49ers, whether it be free agency or a big trade, like, say, Odell Beckham?
I think that there has to be. You know, if you look at the previous CBA, or the CBA we're under now, we have what's called the 89% rule. And basically, the idea is this. And within a 4-year window, you have to pass 89% of the salary cap spent. And we haven't done that. And so if you do not do that, you don't get to push anything forward. So the idea of, you know, we've been able to roll all of this cap forward year in and year out. Well, if we don't spend that money now, we just literally lose it. And so they'll have to pay penalties to make up that percentage. So that money's going somewhere, which makes me really believe, man, there's going to be another big signing. And so, I wouldn't be surprised with, just the deal that we just saw, that it's front loaded where it's almost, 40 to 50% in that first year, very similar to what we did with Jimmy G, where we got 37 in that first year. So something like that's going to happen, but we're going to get a pass rusher and we're going to get a safety in free agency. Now, whether that's a day before the draft and we just pick up somebody for depth, or if we go out and get somebody like Justin Houston, or, Earl Thomas is who I'm hoping for. I think most of the fan base is waiting on that as well. But one of those two guys, like, I would be shocked if we don't get one of those two.
And it's very interesting that Jane Slater for NFL Network reported that the 49ers haven't made contact with Earl Thomas. And that is kind of surprising. She said if his numbers scare teams and it falls to the 8-10 million year range, Cowboys could be in play. So it sounds like the Cowboys are going to lowball Earl Thomas. He's asking for 2 years, $30 million. He wants to be the highest paid safety in the NFL. We saw Landon Collins' number. I think that's averaging a little over 14. So Earl wants to be the top dog. He wants to be $15 million per year. I understand sort of pumping the brakes on that coming off of his leg injury and his broken leg. They have the money. They can fit it in, and especially with the way they've been front-loading stuff, if they continue to do that, that'll be great for their future cap as well, because it'll keep looking much better in the past. Usually teams do the opposite, where they pay them a little bit now on this long contract and then end up cutting half of the end of the contract off. But Earl Thomas, $15 million a year, are you willing to go that far for him?
For us, I am, right? And so, I always look at, I put this out earlier today, and it said this, here's the three questions you need to ask in free agency. Number one, did the team get better by the signing? That's going to be obvious with the Earl Thomas check. Number two, is the contract going to hurt your future salary cap years? 2 years, $30 million does not, okay? And then the third question is, any other question you have, go back to number one. Like, that's what it is. And so if this is a 2 year, $30 million deal, we're not going to lose out anywhere. We have that in spades. Our salary cap structure is great, and especially with the 2 year deal. Why not front load it whenever we have to hit that 89% anyway and make it where he gets $20 million the first year, $10 million the second year? I think that's there. Now, and another thing I will say is this front office, we don't leak very much. Everybody's rumored to go to the 49ers, which is the new thing, and that's kind of fun. But this front office, like, any draft picks that we get in the first and second round, everybody scratches their head like, man, we didn't see that coming. And then on top of that, free agent signings, the ones that we do get, it comes out of left field. And so Quan Alexander was not a person that was being projected to go to the 49ers at all.
No.
And so it just pops up. So kind of, whatever those people are saying out there, and you hear the rumors and all that stuff, you kind of have to distance yourself from that, because this front office does not do that.
And then on the other side of that, there was, I think it was Chris Mortensen on ESPN, dropped the 49ers name in there talking about Le'Veon Bell, said the Jets were the leader for Le'Veon Bell's services, and the Jets have really been the only team really strongly linked to Le'Veon Bell this whole time. But he said something about the 49ers, and then I think it was Evan Silva tweeted about it, and that really took off. I was watching the same segment. I was kind of half paying attention, but it didn't sound to me like it was, okay, this is inside information. The 49ers are in on this. It was like just some weird speculation. So I'm not buying that. It makes zero sense to me if the 49ers go after Le'Veon Bell. Are you buying that report?
No, I don't understand it. You're going to put him at slot, or where are we going to put him?
Yeah.
And so I understand that he would be much better than Jarek and things like that, and as far as, talent wise, but from a standpoint of the Shanahan offense going back to his father, it doesn't make sense. We're already kind of in the top tier paying at that position, and we already have so many mouths to feed anyway. It'd be nice to have on your team for sure, but I just don't get, if you're not interested in bringing in Antonio Brown because of the stuff that has been going on, I have a hard time with John Lynch saying no on Antonio Brown because of personality, whatever, but yes on Le'Veon Bell because of stuff or whatever, because it's not even a position of need. So I don't think that much is going to come from that. If I had to guess, Le'Veon Bell's can't put that out there just because it's a fun place and they have salary cap.
Right.
And so just trying to make up a market for himself.
No, I totally agree. And to tease our draft episode that's going to come up probably early next week, I'll let you guys know when that's actually going to drop. So let's say the Odell Beckham thing happens, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to mess with the 49ers' current draft picks, only having 5 picks coming into this year before that extra comp pick. So they got a couple of sixth rounders, no fifth, and then their regular first through fourth rounders. You willing to dangle a couple of those picks for Odell Beckham? You trying to talk future picks? You willing to move down from number two if Nick Bosa might potentially be there for the 49ers? How do you feel about that?
Yes, I would. I would be willing to finagle something. Now, I'm not giving up the farm. So obviously, you know, they're picking at that six spot. So you're going to include two dropping down to six, but that's not going to be enough. Now, why would they do this is if they decide, hey, we have to have a quarterback. So you drop down from two to six, but then it's going to include something else, whether that's a two next year or a three this year. So if I was packaging it, I would have no problem saying, look, we'll swap first. You get our third, we get your fifth. And I think that that would be pretty close to the compensation that they're looking for. You know, we would take the salary, obviously, but then we're still getting the picks. And, you know, that number six, and a big reason why I would say okay, is I love this draft at the edge position. Nick Bosa is my number one on my board, and it's not close. And I love that man. I really hope that he plays for the 49ers. But if you had to swap that out for one of the other edge guys at six, who there's going to be somebody be there, whether that's, you know, Josh Allen, Cleveland Farrell, Burns, Ferguson, who I'm pretty high on. There's going to be Montez Sweat. There's going to be a stud there. There's five right there that I'd be very happy with. If I could pair that with Odell, hell yeah, I'm taking that.
That's a perfect segue. You guys are going to want to tune in to part two of this conversation with John Chapman, talking strictly NFL draft, breaking down some film and what we liked from some of these top prospects, and that'll come up next week. John, thank you so much for the time.
Appreciate it, man.
Okay, thanks to John Chapman for joining the show. You can find him on Twitter at @JL_Chapman. More with him next week, breaking down some NFL prospects. But I want to bring on somebody from the Locked On Podcast Network, co-host of Locked On Bucks, James Yarko, to help us get to know Quan Alexander a little better. All right, joining me now, it's always nice to talk with other folks from the Locked On Podcast Network, James Yarko. He is the co-host of Locked On Buccaneers, and he's going to give us his insights to the newest 49er linebacker, Quan Alexander. James, thank you for coming on with me in short notice here.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm just a little disappointed it's under these circumstances.
Yeah, so it sounds like fans in Tampa really liked Quan Alexander. So before we get to what kind of a player he is, I'd really like to know what kind of a person the 49ers are getting and what Quan Alexander brings to an NFL locker room.
Quan Alexander is just, he's phenomenal. There's no other way to put it. He's been a fan favorite since he entered the league, a fourth round pick that all of a sudden became a starter throughout training camp, and he never looked back. So you're getting a guy who's just, he's happy to be there. He's a fun guy for, you know, for the locker room, and the Bucs weren't kidding when he was referred to numerous times as the heart and soul of the team. He really is that kind of person, that kind of leader. You know, off the field, he's been great. His his story about his brother being murdered is just an absolute heartbreaker, but. Yeah, you know, there was some insight on that on one of the shows on FS1 where you got to know his parents, you got to know kind of Quan behind the scenes. His mother's very active on Twitter, and she's just an absolute sweetheart. So I mean, there's really not a whole lot that 49ers fans are going to be disappointed about when it comes to Quan Alexander, the guy.
That's interesting. I got to check that out because I didn't know any of that about his background aside from, you know, the football stuff, fourth round pick. And you know, I love the 6'1". I think he was 227 pounds. So undersized linebacker coming out of LSU, ran a 4.55, really athletic player. And you see that on tape, but he plays a little bit bigger than that. Was he bulked up a little bit after he got to the Bucs?
A little bit, but not much. You know, he wanted to keep his ability to track the ball from sideline to sideline. And he, much like Lavonte David, there wasn't, you know, it wasn't very often that you saw the ball carrier go down and one of, if not both of those guys were around the ball. He is that kind of player that he can fly all over the field. You know, there was, you know, I mentioned the story about his brother. Well, the first game after that was against the Atlanta Falcons, and he has an interception in the end zone against the Falcons, and it gets called back. And the next Falcons possession, Julio Jones catches a pass over the middle. Quan chases him down and just strips the ball right out of his hands and turns around and starts running the other way. He has that kind of closing speed. So, Yeah, he didn't bulk up a whole lot because he wanted to keep that part of his game, and he plays much faster than that 40-yard dash time.
Yeah, and that's a pretty fast 40-yard dash to begin with. So I think that's exactly what the 49ers are hoping to get, someone with that kind of range and someone who can help out in coverage with that cover three scheme. So, you know, anybody can go look at the stats, and I'm sure everybody listening to this show has already researched Kwon Alexander, looked at the numbers he's put up through his NFL career, looked at the PFF grades. But what kind of a player are they getting in coverage? Because I think that's going to be a big part of it. Obviously, he's got the athleticism. He's got that sideline-to-sideline speed, might play a little bigger than his size, and can bring some thump at times. I know there were some issues with some missed tackles, and he does have shorter arms, which might be the cause and the root problem of that. But I'm really interested in what kind of a player he is in coverage.
That's probably one of the weaker ends of his game, is he's not great in coverage. He shows flashes, but there's still definitely room for improvement there, much like with the missed tackles. Kwon is the type of player, he's incredibly aggressive. And so a lot of times he'll overcommit and it can bite him. But, you know, again, he has that makeup speed where he can kind of go back and correct his mistake. But as far as his pass coverage, I'm not going to lie to you guys. He's not great, but he's not terrible either. There's room for improvement. And I think as he continues to grow and develop as an NFL player, he will get better, but it's definitely not the strong part of his game.
Best I can tell, most of the Bucs fans, and I know you were a little bit disappointed to see Kwon Alexander go, so I think that's a good sign for 49ers fans. Was there a little bit of, okay, man, we got to really sign Kwon Alexander to a long-term deal, and then you see the 49ers are going to pony up, and we'll see how the numbers really play out here, and if there's incentives or, you know, what kind of bonus structure there is in this contract. But when you see 4 years, $54 million, and at the time of his signing, it's not going to hold, but being the highest paid linebacker in the NFL, was that a little bit like, yeesh, that's a lot of money?
It was, but I think a lot of that has to do with the Bucs' financial situation. They traded DeSean Jackson away, getting rid of his $10 million. Well, they still only have $13 million in cap space now. So they had a number on Kwon. They tried really hard to work out a long-term deal, maybe with a little bit of deferred payment or backloaded contract. They just couldn't get there. And when you see that kind of number, the Bucs were never going to pay that amount. They were never going to be able to pay that amount. And, you know, good on Kwon. He's played for the first 4 years of his career under the CBA rookie pay structure of a fourth round pick. So not only is he getting money that he deserves, he's also getting money that he should have gotten before. So, you know, a big shout out to former Buck John Lynch for making that happen. But when we saw that number, you know, we knew that it was never going to happen. As hard as they tried, you know, we kind of got the sense that this wasn't going to be in the cards for the Bucks back a little bit before the scouting combine. It was just kind of it was an inevitability, unfortunately.
That's a great point about him playing for such a high level on that 4 year rookie fourth round contract. And the NFL is a crazy place because you're either severely underpaid or severely overpaid, it seems like. In the free agency period, things get so nuts. One quick question before I let you go, James, and thanks again for your time here. Do you have any insight on how things were going with his rehab and that ACL injury?
He had been posting a lot of videos on Twitter and Instagram about him working out at the Bucs facility, and everything seems to be on track. I think that also played a little bit into the Buccaneers' decision to not spend up to his asking price, was because they were fearful of him coming off that ACL injury. But with the way things go anymore, we see these ACL injuries and they're not what they used to be. They used to be a death sentence for these NFL players. And anymore, we see guys come back and they're as strong or stronger than ever. So he's progressing nicely. He's making improvements. I don't see any reason why he won't be a full go come training camp.
Good stuff there from James Yarko. He is co-host of Locked On Bucs podcast, and it sounds like the 49ers got themselves a good one in Kwon Alexander. James, thank you so much for the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On 49ers. Thank you so much to my guests, John and James. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back tomorrow on Winky Wednesday with Mr. Nick Winkler, breaking down all of the free agent frenzy right here on Locked On 49ers.